Hi, everyone, and welcome to Oscar Wilde After Dark, a bonus series where we discuss the wilder side of Oscar nominees and winners. I'm Sophia Simonello.
And I'm Nick Rickrow.
And today we are carrying on our Linklater trend here. We are talking about his 2003 classic, School of Rock. This is, I think I can say for both of us, one of our favorite movies. I saw this for the first time when I was 10 years old, and I immediately fell in love with it. I thought it was just about the funniest thing I'd ever seen. So I am very excited to talk about this today.
So am I. I saw this when I was 12. I had rewatched it so many times as a kid, and I feel like now as I watch it, I just feel all that nostalgia. I remember some of Jack Black's physicality, like with his hands and his eyes. Like when I see that, it just takes me back, and it's such a great place to be in. All the performances, we'll get into everything, including Oscar connections, different awards that this one that I didn't even know of that are just incredible, and some listener questions as well. So yeah, I'm very excited to talk about this, to quote this, and all of the music too. That's one of my other favorite parts of the movie.
Yeah, I can't wait to quote it, especially, and to talk about the music, like you said. So let's get right into it. Description here: after being kicked out of his rock band, Dewey Finn becomes a substitute teacher of an uptight elementary private school, only to try and turn his class into a rock band. This was directed by Richard Linklater and written by Mike White. It stars Jack Black, Joan Cusack, Mike White, and Sarah Silverman, among many other fantastic child actors. Some awards here. At the MTV Movie Awards, Jack Black won Best Comedic Performance, and it was also nominated for Best On-Screen Team. This is my favorite one. Jack Black was runner-up at the New York Film Critics Circle for Best Actor.
That totally shocked me. I was like, what?
I love it so much. We will talk about Jack Black and what could have been an award season for him, what should have been an award season for him. This won Best Movie for Grown-Ups Who Refuse to Grow Up at the AARP Movies for Grown-Ups Awards. And Eileen Starger, the casting director, also won Casting for Feature Film Comedy at the Casting Society of America Artios Awards.
And then some other awards that it was nominated for but didn't win. It was nominated at the American Cinema Editor Eddie Awards, at the Critics' Choice Awards for Song for School of Rock, and then also at the Golden Globes for Actor, Comedy or Musical for Black. It's also nominated at the Grammys for Best Compilation Soundtrack Album for Motion Picture, Television, or Other Visual Media, at the Teen Choice Awards for Movie Comedy, Black for Actor Comedy, Black for Movie Liar, and Silverman for Movie Sleazebag. And then last but not least, at the Motion Picture Sound Editor Golden Reel Awards for Best Sound Editing in a Musical. Some of these I love too. Part of what we can talk about is why this wasn't nominated for any songs at the Oscars, but I love the Grammy inclusion. I love the Teen Choice Awards. I don't know about Sleazebag. I think her character was written rather harshly. I think for the movie's sake, for the real Ned character's transformation in the end. But this is a great collection. I love the AARP Movie Award for Grown-Ups Who Refuse to Grow Up. I think that one's my favorite of the list.
I think so too. And we can get into, I read the oral history of School of Rock, this great article through Rolling Stone, which was a compilation of interviews with cast members and crew talking about the inspiration for the movie and the creation of it. And a lot of it was Richard Linklater and many of the crew saying, like, we are just a bunch of Gen X losers who love rock and wanted to put that into this movie. So it fits really nicely with that award. And then we also have some Oscar connections. So Richard Linklater, like we mentioned last week on our Hitman episode, he has 5 nominations, 3 screenplay nominations, and he was also nominated for Best Picture and Best Director for Boyhood. Joan Cusack has 2 nominations for Best Supporting Actress for Working Girl and In-N-Out. Sandra Adair, who is Richard Linklater's longtime film editor, was also nominated for Boyhood. Scott Rudin, the producer, he won Best Picture for No Country for Old Men and was nominated for 9 other Oscars. Many of the department heads have also won or been nominated for Emmys. Alan Dangerio, who's the hairstylist, was nominated for makeup for Philadelphia. Tom Fleischman, the re-recording mixer, won sound mixing for Hugo and was nominated for 4 other Oscars. And Danny Michael, our sound mixer, was nominated for Mississippi Burning. So quite a few connections here. I think the big one that I always think of, aside from Richard Linklater, is Joan Cusack, who plays our great head of school, Rosalie Mullins. Can't wait to talk about her and her scene at the bar singing Stevie Nicks.
Mm-hmm. I love her in Working Girl. She probably should have won. But her turn here is just so fun. I'm assuming she's your favorite in the movie. Getting to see her let loose is one of the best moments. But I love seeing her in this neurotic state otherwise, where she either yells at the kids or is just so awkward with Jack Black and some of the other teachers that by the end of the movie, when she's like, well, your kids are missing, she's just, oh, well, I'm going to be fired. And she just doesn't care. And you see that in Cusack, and it's just so, so fun. And then she goes to the concert and you see her talking to that like mostly shirtless guitarist or whatever he is. And she's just so uncomfortable. It's
Spider.
So amazing.
When Avatar The Way of Water came out and that character in that movie was named Spider and people were, I remember like tweeting about him and everything. I'm like, this isn't Spider. Spider is the man in leather in School of Rock.
So talk about why you like Joan Cusack in this movie.
Joan Cusack in particular, I really love here because I think she is just a great comedic actress. I love her in Working Girl as well and in In-N-Out. But it's funny, I think, now watching it because I've worked in a private school very similar to Horace Green. I will not give away the name of that school on the pod, but she captures the head of school mentality and persona so well here. I think it is one of the most complicated, awful jobs you could take just because of parent complaints that you get and just that kind of needing to live up to the prestige of a school. I think that one of the things that Mike White does really well here, in addition to Joan Cusack, is really understand specifically what the world of independent schools, private schools, looks like when kids know how much their parents are paying to send them to these schools, when there is a level of expectation that their teachers need to be performing to. It's explored in a very fun way here. And I think just further reiterates just a lot of the issues with private schools. I'll just say that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Joan Cusack here, how neurotic she is, like you said, it's so funny. I think the comedy works really well for the character. I love when she's reprimanding that little girl in her office and she's like, would you like a hug?
Yes.
It scares her. And of course, that scene in the bar with Jack Black when she has about a sip of beer and just hearing Stevie Nicks start singing The Edge of 17 just puts her on another planet. It's just so funny and so perfect for this character. So I feel like she just has a really good understanding of who Miss Mullins is as a character.
And I think the beats that we see, that moment is my other favorite, when the girl just screams when she puts her hands out and she's not going to touch her. But
right.
That kid is so scared. Feeling that fear is exactly what this principal needs to be, really. Mm-hmm. And so I think what Mike White really understands, too, is this hierarchy in schools and being a student, being a teacher. All of these characters feel real. And that's something that Linklater really wanted, too, is like when they soundproofed the room, they didn't want viewers being like, oh, this is so stupid. The whole school can hear them. So he put in that scene to try to make it feel more real. And I think that's something they capture really well. White and Linklater is just the environment of the class, also taking into account that a lot of these kids, this is their film debut, like Miranda Cosgrove. So it makes them feel like kids in a fifth grade class, but also some of that naivete with that. and wrapping it up in this like larger than life battle of the bands experience too. It's cool. I think that's where the nostalgia sets in. And my two recent viewings, I just like couldn't stop crying at the end, which hadn't happened before. But I think that's wrapped up into it too, is just feeling the weight of this experience for the kids and like where their lives can go from here. And looking at it almost on the other side now of like not being that kid, of us being closer to the teacher's age now. It is a very cool feeling. And I think that brings it back to what we talked about with Linklater and his filmography too last week, of really understanding the human experience and these films changing over time for the viewer.
Yeah, I really agree with that. Like I said, when I talked about Boyhood last week a little bit, of how viewing that 10 years later has completely changed the movie for me and made me think about the movie differently because I think about my life differently at this stage. And this movie is the same way, even though it's not this meditative exploration of growing up, it's a comedy, but you still get that feeling because of how grounded it is. And I have to say, I was really surprised when I saw that you cried during the ending in your Letterboxd review. And I was thinking, I'm not going to cry. I've seen School of Rock so many times. There's no way. And sure enough, during the Battle of the Bands, for some reason, when Tamika goes up for her solo, I was crying.
Yes.
And of course, they show her parents in the crowd. And yeah, I don't know. I'm just an emotional movie watcher. But yeah, I think being close to Jack Black, who was in his 30s when he filmed this. So being, I think, closer to the teacher's age now to the kids when I first saw this movie, it does make it a different experience. And I think one of the reasons why I love this movie as much as I do is because I've really had, I think, the two experiences associated with the movie. When I grew up, my mom in particular made a really concerted effort for me to listen to music from that time period. I remember she was tired of the music I was listening to when I was in third grade, fourth grade. And she, I still will never forget this, told me I needed to listen to Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon. This is very Almost Famous of me. And I remember hearing Time by Pink Floyd for the first time and it totally changing my perspective on music and what music could be, which feels very much like School of Rock. And I remember when I watched this movie for the first time being so into a lot of the music. And I think there's just something really special when you're that age and you're learning about music history, specifically, I think, around classic rock, but around all of the different genres within that. I mean, my parents were really big new wave people too. So I grew up listening to bands that they don't really listen to in School of Rock, but there's just something about discovering art when you're that age that's so formative. So I love how this movie explores that. And having been a teacher before, I think this movie does a really good job of showing how rewarding that profession can be when you can connect with kids while also showing how demanding it is at the same time. And yeah, I think what you said too about Linklater casting the kids is so important because none of them were actors aside from Miranda Cosgrove, really, who had just shot the pilot of Drake and Josh, but he wanted to find musicians more than he wanted to find child actors. So a lot of the kids that he found were just guitar players, singers that he wanted to bring into this world. And I think it does make it feel much more authentic. You don't feel like they're performing. You feel like these are real kids at Horace Green.
And your point about it being rewarding is really what I got this time around is, you know, Dewey does this to make up money that he's needing to pay Patty and Ned. But in the end, when Dewey and Ned have this heart to heart, Dewey says that he did it for the kids. And that's really what teaching is all about. And I think why teachers being underpaid stay in their profession is that they really care. They want to see these kids grow up. Something that is echoed in Abbott Elementary too, in that why Janine like really needs to be this teacher and stay at Abbott is that she adores these kids. And that's something I really felt this time around. And related to that is the conversation that Lawrence has with Dewey, Mr. S as Dewey, during lunch. And he's like, I don't think I should be in the band. I'm not cool enough. And he's like, no, you are cool. Like, this is what a rocker is all about, and you're really good at the piano. And that's something the actor, Robert Tsai, who's playing Lawrence, did to Linklater during filming, is like, I don't think I should be in this movie. I'm not cool enough. So to see that really broke my heart, but also made me emotional at the end, is because Lawrence wants to fight Freddie when Freddie was like, we got 3 weeks off. Like, this didn't mean anything. And he's like, yes, it did. Like, this saved me, is really what he's saying. And I think to feel that and to see that when you have bullies in school and all these different personalities, is like, Dewey did make an impression on Lawrence. Like he says, I'm pretty sure I touched them too in the end. And in the parent-teacher conference, and all the parents start screaming, is like really perfect writing also. But yeah, it's more than just comedy to me.
I agree. And I think a lot of that also just comes from the origin story of School of Rock. So where Mike White got this idea, which is that this teacher named Hans Fenger, he taught at an elementary school in British Columbia in the 70s. And he just had no teaching experience. He just got this job because there was a teacher shortage. And he realized that kids, if you shared rock music with them, if you shared really good music with them that wasn't just children's music, they would have a way to express their emotions. And he ended up showing them things like Fleetwood Mac and a lot of Beach Boys songs. He specifically cited In My Room, which is an incredible song, as being something that kids could relate to because they were starting to experience these emotions and feelings like loneliness, and they didn't really have an outlet for that or art that, you know, understood their experience, which I thought was really cool. And he actually, in 1976, brought the kids into the gym and recorded this album of them performing. And Mike White rediscovered this album in the early 2000s and used this as inspiration for creating School of Rock, which I had no idea that that was the inspiration. I didn't know anything about this album either, which is called Innocence and Despair. But I think that that is just really interesting, and it shows you how important music is for kids and how important it is, I think, as teachers to step outside of the box from the curriculum or what you're supposed to be teaching them.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you saying your mom gave you a Pink Floyd album is literally a scene from this movie where he hands out albums as homework. And, you know, that probably will inspire people or kids just like you. And that story of, you know, finding music they would probably never have listened to otherwise, or just from a previous generation.
Absolutely. So I think before we get into some of our prompts that we usually go through on these After Dark episodes, let's get into some of the questions that we got from listeners. So Roy Mao asked, Jack Black, smash or pass? A classic prompt of ours.
This is a pass for me. I think this is Jack Black's best performance, that he is just giving 110%, but it's a pass for me. What about you?
I think, like, as Dewey Finn, this is a definite pass, specifically considering their apartment setup and how messy he is. Like, especially at the end when the kids go and wake him up, you can see, like, a to-go container with ketchup and fries. That always just disgusts me. So that's a pass for me. But I would say smash for his character in The Holiday. He just seems like a really nice person. Everything that people say about him is just that he's really funny and really kind and just treats everyone so well on set. So I would say definite pass for Dewey Finn, though.
And then our next question comes from Isabel. What is your favorite needle drop in the movie?
Well, I'm so glad that Isabel asked this because she, as my sister, clearly had a very similar experience with music and the influence of our parents growing up. So I have to say my favorite needle drop is Bonzo Goes to Bitburg, the Ramones song that plays over that great montage when Dewey or Mr. S is teaching them about the history of classic rock. And we get to see, you know, all of those great drummers like Keith Moon, and you get to see Freddie being so influenced by them, and you get to see Zach practicing, and just their eyes lighting up to all of that, I think, is really great. And the song I actually didn't know the song before watching the movie back then, and I remember putting it on a CD that I burned for the car. But other than that, I have to also say Immigrant Song by Led Zeppelin. Led Zeppelin's also a very important band to me, and it is shocking that they got the rights, because Led Zeppelin, it's very hard to get rights to their music. They're notoriously difficult, but I loved learning that Linklater, they declined him for Dazed and Confused, but he wanted to try again, and Jack Black somehow convinced them. So they got Immigrant Song, and that's a very fun scene too when they're driving in the van back from the Battle of the Bands audition.
Yeah. So it's actually on the Blu-ray that they sent Led Zeppelin a video of 1,000 fans behind like Jack Black and Richard Linklater saying they really want to use this song, and it worked. But they have that video on the Blu-ray, so I'm really excited to watch that. I listened to a bit of the commentary as well. Apart from like the actual songs that they wrote for the movie, I mean, School of Rock is just one of my favorites. I may have had the album, like the soundtrack, when I was a kid. I can't remember, or like you did, I just burned songs from the movie onto
like
a CD.
Like LimeWire.
I really liked the Bonzo Goes to Bitburg because just of that montage. Again, that's a really Linklater moment of teaching us the history of music. And seeing all of that on the chalkboard is just quintessentially him, and also very cool, and him wanting to teach these students about the actual history. Another song that is used in the world of the film is Touch Me by The Doors. I like how he kind of switches this song up.
Lawrence is good at piano.
Yeah.
He shall be rocking in my show.
I like how this is how he puts the band together. And you see the song come about. He's putting all the chords together with the different instruments. And then he starts singing. And it's like secondhand embarrassment, but it's also so funny and so Jack Black. It fits perfectly in that moment. So that one, you mentioned Edge of 17 that Joan Cusack sings to later in the bar by Stevie Nicks, obviously. Again, another movie where Linklater just understands all of the music, important songs throughout rock and roll's history, and places them in the right moments in the film, too.
Yeah, I love the music. Substitute by The Who, also great. So many good ones. Another question from Isabel, of course. This is a really fun one. Which student were you most like at that age? I think you know the answer for mine, so I'll let you go first.
I think it was a mix of Billy and Lawrence, being a bit shy and quiet, but maybe also a little judgmental.
I love Billy.
I like Billy when after Dewey is like, come on, tell me bad things about myself. And like the moment has passed and Billy still goes, you're tacky and I hate you. He's like, okay, see me after class.
You're tacky and I hate you is one of the best lines from the movie. I also love how Billy, his favorite artist is Liza Minnelli. He probably went on to have an Oscar podcast.
And here we are. There's also a funny moment with Billy early on when Dewey is first introduced to the class. I kind of like seeing everyone scramble around to see what they're doing. And he's sitting on his desk reading a book, and then he just goes and sits in his desk. It's just so funny for a classroom setting. I'm guessing you were Summer, or am I wrong?
How'd you know? So I had to work very hard later, I would say, in life, like after high school, to not be like this anymore. But when I was 10, it was really bad. Like, I was very much like, I had to be on student council. I had to get my gold stars. I had to have perfect grades. I was very much that child. And specifically, I think the other part that's so funny about her, I mean, I do love her groupie. You want me to be a groupie? They're sluts. They sleep with the band is so good. So, like, her not wanting to be a groupie and wanting to be the band manager. Also hilarious. But the part that also was very me when I was younger is when they're at the parent-teacher night and her mom says, why is my daughter suddenly obsessed with David Geffen? Because when I was that age, I wasn't obsessed with David Geffen, but I was very obsessed with specific people in careers that I like thought were really cool, but that none of my peers knew. Like when I was that age and I wanted to be Mary Tyler Moore, and I did a presentation and wrote a little paper about her for career day. And I used to act out the opening credits to her show.
Oh my God.
That is very summer, I think. And I was just like very obsessed with adults in specific careers that I wanted to have or achieve. So that's very relatable to me. But I also just love, again, that line about David Geffen. Anytime I see anything about David Geffen or go by David Geffen Hall at Lincoln Center, I always think of summer.
I was definitely a bit of summer, too. Like seeing her face light up when he says, oh, 4.5 gold stars for you. Like I feel that inside. Yeah. Our next question comes from Brian Sudfield. Why do you feel Jack Black missed the Oscar 5? So Sean Penn won for Mystic River this year. And our other nominees were Johnny Depp for Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl, Ben Kingsley for House of Sand and Fog, Jude Law for Cold Mountain, and Bill Murray for Lost in Translation.
So I like some of these this Oscar year, but Jude Law for Cold Mountain, get out of there. We don't need that nomination. That's just one I can say. I feel like Sean Penn and Mystic River, that wasn't going anywhere. They love Eastwood, I think, at this period too. And really just throughout Oscar history, they love these dark, dour films, like very serious dramas. And School of Rock was just not that. It is a fun comedy for families. Like this was something, yes, it has a PG-13 rating, but I think a lot of kids grew up watching this. And it's really, I think, geared towards kids and adults. And Jack Black's performance, while I think it's fantastic, I can imagine Academy voters not liking his particular style of over-the-top comedy in this movie in particular. So I think it's really just genre bias, but he really should have been here.
I mean, my favorite inclusion here is Johnny Depp for Pirates, just because that movie is comedy. And I think it's shocking. I just think there's no way that Jack Black was making it in. I mean, this movie didn't even get a song nomination or anything technical, which it absolutely should have. So best actor? No way. I think maybe the best possibility could have been for Joan Cusack in supporting actress, like something oddball like that, where it's more of a character actor kind of inclusion. Again, I love Black here, but it just wasn't going to happen.
I love the Golden Globe nomination. It's a textbook great Golden Globe nomination. And of course, the runner-up at New York Film Critics Circle. So inspired. And our last question that we have is from Connor Lorenz. If you had to choose School of Rock or Hitman?
It's School of Rock. I mean, Hitman is very new and maybe in 10, 15 years, I'll feel differently. But right now, I mean, this movie is a cult classic. People from our generation absolutely love it. And for different reasons, I would pick School of Rock right now. What about you?
I would absolutely pick School of Rock. As much as I liked Hitman, I love School of Rock. And it just has a power over me. It had a power over me as a child and continues to as an adult. And not just because I liked it as a kid. So I think that speaks to the power of the writing, the performances, really everything about it. So yeah, it's School of Rock for me.
Well, that was a preview of our episode on School of Rock. If you'd like to listen to the rest of the episode, you can subscribe on patreon.com/OscarWilde at the After Dark tier or higher, where you'll get access to this, all of our previous episodes, including the opportunity to vote in polls for other episodes. So thank you so much for listening.
Thank you all for listening. If you like our show, please feel free to rate, review, and follow. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at OscarWildPod. Next week on Oscar Wilde, we will have a fun new episode. We are bringing back one of our favorite returning guests, Ryan Lamb. He will be joining us to talk about Inside Out 2, one of the summer's most anticipated releases, and we'll be talking a little bit about Inside Out as well and catching up with him and seeing what he thinks about the state of the summer box office and movies as a whole.
Thanks, everyone, and we'll see you next time.